If you have your own story of being in a cult or a high control group, or if you've had an experience with manipulation or abuse of power you'd like to share,
shoot us an email at trustmepod@gmail.com.
Trust me.
Dude, you trust me.
Trust me. I'm like a smart person.
Yeah, I've never lied to you. I never have lied to you.
If you think that one person has all the answers,
don't!
Welcome to Trust Me, the podcast about cults, extreme belief, and the abuse of power from two influencers who've actually experienced it. I am Lola Blanc.
Why are you laughing, Lola Blanc? We are influencers. I'm Megan Elizabeth, but you already know that. I've influenced you.
Are we influencing? Do you guys feel influenced? I don't know. I'd like to think so. Not really. Listen, y'all, today our guest is Jordan Harbinger, the very popular podcaster and our podcast one brother. Today we'll have a conversation about the difference between influence and manipulation, what he thinks makes people susceptible to scams, and how he himself has been scammed.
We'll also talk about the law of attraction, finally, and magical thinking, how to protect yourself from scams, and Jordan's take on how to ethically be a leader.
It's a really fun, like, snappy convo. Clearly a professional.
Yeah, he's a good podcaster.
Yeah. He is. But you guys, I can't wait to tell you. Well, actually, first piece of good news. My film is funded. Yay!
Lola, I'm so excited. Yay! That's so unbelievable.
I know a few of you donated and have not responded to my messages telling me what you want me to say. So I'm going to shout you out. You just got to respond, y'all. Also, starting next week, you guys. So May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And in light of that, we are doing a series on rethinking trauma. So every week in May, and I know we haven't done like a proper cult story in a minute, but just bear with us here because it's going to be super fucking interesting. Every week in May, we're going to have a different expert on, psychologists and whatnot, about how we can think of trauma differently, how we can sort of free ourselves from this idea that it's going to run our lives if we have trauma in our past or if we experience anything difficult. I just think it's important. We want to expose you guys to some new ways of thinking and some different things that can help us to heal. And yeah, we have some really amazing people. So I just wanted to let you know in advance.
I'm pretty excited about it. The interview we already did was pretty life-changing just on how I think about stuff, so.
Yeah, same. So fascinating. I can't wait. But anyway, that's next week. So
This week.
Focus on the present. Let's be present. Megan, presently speaking, what do you consider the cultiest thing that's happened to you this week?
Well, I went and visited my family. And it actually went really well. So I've always worn what I want around my family. My family dresses very conservatively, the long skirts, the buns, all of that. But I went a little bit further this time and just, I dress how I actually like to dress.
Like you bore your midriff.
Yeah, I bore a little midriff. Like I would always bear my midriff sometimes or like wear jeans, but they wouldn't be cute. So it was like the cute version of that, which somehow felt so much more daring and like, I don't know, but I had a really good time and nobody was mad and,
nice.
You know, at least not to my face. So I feel really good about it.
Hey, baby steps, loving this, being your truer self in front of your family. This is great.
I mean, everybody needs to know my true self is a midriff.
Honestly, yes. They don't call it that anymore, though. It's not a midriff. That was a 90s thing. Now it's crop tops.
Oh.
It was belly shirts and like a bare midriff in the 90s. And now it's just crop tops.
Oh.
And your stomach, right? Your abs.
I'm wearing a stomach shirt today.
I'm also wearing a stomach shirt. It's not an ab shirt, to be clear. It's a stomach shirt.
What about you? What was the cultiest thing that happened to you this week?
Okay, I just like have to, I don't even have anything articulate to say about it other than Elon Musk fucking terrifies me.
Yeah.
I know I've talked about him before, but the fact that he bought Twitter, like fully owns Twitter now, is so fucking scary to me. Because I was, and if anyone follows me on Twitter, I was like ranting about it today, but he said, the extreme antibody reaction from those who fear free speech says it all. This shit has almost 1 million likes. This is only 4 hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
This scares me on numerous levels. First of all, Twitter is not good at, like, making sure that Twitter is a safe place for everyone. It's already not good at it. Oh, and then in response to that, he said, "By free speech, I simply mean that which matches the law. I am against censorship that goes far beyond the law. If people want less free speech, they will ask government to pass laws to that effect. Therefore, going beyond the law is contrary to the will of the people." First of all, shut the fuck up. Second of all, my impression of what he's actually upset about is cancel culture, maybe? Or Trump getting banned from Twitter. Trump repeatedly violated the rules of Twitter, which is not a violation of free speech. That is literally just like the rules of the fucking website. So many times they could, if they applied the regular rules to Trump, he would have been banned years before when he actually was. Also, cancel culture has nothing to do with Twitter's censorship. These are two completely unrelated things. Like, one is a cultural issue, but if you want to stop cancel culture, the only way to actually do it is by censoring the people who are canceling.
Right.
What Twitter has done is very mildly, barely banned racial slurs, some extremism. It's added a little warning under misinformation that nobody heeds, by the way, because it just seems like nothing. It barely was addressing any of these problems. And now Elon Musk has purchased Twitter and is saying he's basically going to remove all obstacles to saying whatever the fuck you want. And while I do think that, A, cancel culture can be problematic and can cause harm, and we should all be able to engage in discourse with each other and have opinions and not be banned for our opinions, there are certain opinions, such as those which are dangerous and lead to extremism, that do not belong on public platforms. I guess it would be different if it wasn't an echo chamber where we are all slaves to the algorithms that feed us more and more and more of the content that we like, leading us all to be in our own individual bubbles. If somehow it were actually solved that we weren't all stuck in our bubbles, which leads to extremism, which leads to violence, then it wouldn't be as much of a concern. But the problem is that is what Twitter is. So if we are removing all limits on free speech, that is going to lead to more extremism, inevitably. I don't see how it won't. And conservative Twitter right now is like, oh, the libs are upset. I'm like, yeah, because speech and violence are not completely separate. Thoughts and speech lead to behaviors, and collective behaviors create extremism. I don't know why this is so hard to understand. The fucking richest man in the world should not be the one determining what we can or can't say on the internet. First of all, he's like fucking union busting, multi-billionaire, tweets dick jokes all the time. Like, public opinion is in the hands of this one man. It freaks me out. That's the end of my rant.
Yeah, I mean, it scares me that all these male billionaires, it scares me that Jeff Bezos owns shit. It scares me that they all are owning us. And it's not scary.
No billionaire should have that much influence on public opinion. No individual person should have that much power. That's the problem. You cannot trust individual people to make the right decision when power is inevitably corrupting. Mm-hmm. It's a corrupting influence. He is not going to fucking save us. Elon Musk is not your savior. Did he do a good thing by creating Tesla and getting more electric vehicles on the road? Sure. But that man is self-interested like everyone else who has that much, even a fraction of that much money.
Or like any person without any money, just a person.
Just a person. And the reaction to him is so worshipful that there are so many people, millions and millions of people who are like, yeah, it's the same thing we saw with Trump. He's fucking rich. He knows what he's talking about. He's rich. I trust him. His level of influence is dangerous. I think anyone having that level of influence is incredibly dangerous. I don't care who it is. I don't care what their political inclinations are. But especially when, in particular, he seems to be going through some shit right now and is on a pro-free speech crusade, which really isn't about free speech at all, because if it were about free speech, he would not be fixated on the things that he's fixated on. It would be great if someone could invent a Twitter where we didn't end up in information silos and we actually could engage in discourse with each other, and it wasn't this thing that continued to feed you the same shit that you already see. I would join that social media platform. I know, you guys, it took too long. I know. I'm done for now.
Okay. Well, let's talk to Jordan then.
Okay, let's do it.
Welcome, Jordan Harbinger, to the show. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Your podcast is so interesting. You've had the most fucking fascinating guests on earth, which you know. So before we dive into talking about manipulation and seduction and all of the things that we want to talk to you about, you are a podcaster. You used to be a lawyer. I'm so interested in your background in the world of pickup. Little context. I have gone on Neil Strauss's, like, some of his seminars, like his Weekends with Guys to Help Out years ago. And I wrote an article about it. And this is just like a world that I have a little bit of experience with and very fascinated by. I read The Game, whatever, the whole thing. I was just like super interested in it. But you kind of were in that world and then you stepped away from it. Can you tell us about how you got into it in the first place and what happened?
So I got into it well before Neil Strauss was writing about it. Well, at least before The Game came out. Mm. I was really interested in it. But all the guys and this will not surprise you at all the guys that I met that were also interested in it, save for a few, were just creeps. And there was creeps, and there was also just guys that, like, they didn't need a pickup course. They needed a course on how to be normal in social situations, period.
Actually, I feel like, surprisingly, I've run into a lot of people who don't know what this even means. Can you explain what a pickup artist is?
Yeah, I mean, back then, we didn't really even – I guess we did call it that. But it was just guys learning how to – it depends on your definition. For me, it was – hey, there's a lot of things that you do wrong with being social, whether it's with the opposite sex or with anybody. Here are some codes that you can't see, that you can't read, that you don't know about because you studied for your whole life, or because you're, you know, a nerd, or because you have you're on the autism spectrum or whatever, or you were raised a certain way. Here's some rules that you're breaking that if you knew the rules and you knew what was going on, you would do better with the opposite sex. Mm-hmm. For me, it was like, okay, this is a psychology kind of thing. But it's not just about getting laid. It's not just about sex. But I will say that the majority of the guys in this kind of community were obsessed with sex and also were weird as hell.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so, the term negging comes from this.
That stupid ass crap was what defined the community of pickup. And that was always kind of gross and stupid. And frankly, unnecessary. Like, not that, hey, this doesn't work at all, but it's like, when I started to get really into this, I met all the guys at the top. Like, Neil was great and we're still friends, but when I met, like, Mystery, I was like, this guy is not a successful human with a good life.
Right, right.
No one should be emulating this person. He has undiagnosed, or I should say diagnosed but untreated mental illness. Mm. He's super depressed. He doesn't have real friendships with very many people. He certainly doesn't have healthy relationships with the opposite sex. Why do you want to emulate this person?
I always thought Neil Strauss and Mystery were the same person.
You did?
Yeah, they're not.
No, he talked about – Mystery's the one with the hat.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I watched the show.
Oh, no, Neil's – Neil's the journalist.
I didn't feel like I could relate to those guys at all because I was – look, I was in Michigan when this was starting and they were in Hollywood. So they were like wearing light-up necklaces and belt buckles in Hollywood. And I was like – if I do that here, I'm just going to look like an actual clown, which they also did, by the way.
For sure.
But just balloons.
It's called peacocking, guys, when people wear these like extravagant pieces to make you talk to them, basically.
Uh-huh. So it was just kind of dumb. And I was like, I don't need this. Like, I should work on myself and figure this out for myself. These guys were treating it, and I'm not trying to, like, I have to paint with a wide brush because we don't have 5 hours. But like, these guys were treating people like it was a video game where you could do a cheat code using the controller and you get some extra lives. And I was like, actually, this is a vehicle for self-improvement or self-actualization where I can figure out why I'm getting insecurities triggered around certain people or why I feel like I can't fit in certain places. And I can build confidence using this. Whereas a lot of people were just putting this as a bandage over their wounded masculinity or lack thereof. And they were like, oh, no one will figure out that I'm a quiet dork if I pretend that I'm awesome and make up all these bullshit stories and lies about myself. So they had these whole routines that were like, yeah, so I was in the loaner car and the dealer didn't have any more Ferraris. So I'm driving this regular sports car, okay? And blah, blah, pick up my girlfriend, yada, yada. And I'm like, this is one, obviously a lie and only works on like country bumpkins that are in LA for a weekend and are like, oh my God, he has a Ferrari. For me, I'm like, this is not where I'm going. I'm in law school. I'm getting a job on Wall Street. I'm not going to get away with this. So I'm not even going to work with this nonsense. Mm. And so we split off very early. And my friend and I were like, there's a way to do this naturally where you don't look like an idiot and you don't have to make shit up. And if you have a vulnerability, you can actually wear it on your sleeve. And that makes you more attractive because you're being real with other people, but you're not afraid to do that. Mm. But it's also not just new age, like, you know, sort of sensitivity training for dudes, which was like the other end of this pickup thing. And so we fit in this really narrow niche, which they ended up calling natural game, which sounds so cringe in 2022, but was perfect in 2006, 2007. Yeah. And then the book The Game came out, and people were flooding in by like the millions to this community and were really into it and couldn't get enough of it. But a lot of guys were like, this is actually really corny. And then they would find us because we were like the one shop in town that was not corny. Not that nothing we did was corny or cheesy, but it was way more like even now in 2022. I'm like, I could still stand behind a lot of the stuff that we did in 2008. Like some of it's a little bit like, eh, I might modify this, but none of it was like, oh, my God, we were borderline misogynist. It was more like tweak this for the Me Too era, but it wasn't misogynist and we weren't victimizing anyone. We just looked a little young bro-y was like the guiltier we were. But some of these outfits were flat out ridiculous. And I remember telling friends like, you're going to go to prison or get accused of something. You need to stop doing what you're doing.
Oh, I mean, I remember reading, I forget the term now, but it was like, oh, last minute resistance, LMR. If a woman is giving you last minute resistance to sex, then you like chill out for a while and ice her, freeze her out and then try again. I was like, that is assault. What you're describing is assault.
It's manipulative and it's assault. And what's funny is we used to have this rep as like wimps because I was like, if you're getting last minute resistance, you go the fuck home, dude.
Yeah.
And you call her the next day and you see if she wants to go on another date. And they're like, oh, look at these wimps. They're not closing. And I'm like, you're going to go to prison. Mm-hmm. I'm in law school. This is literally a felony.
Closing. It's a deal to them.
It's so cringe.
And even the term, I remember hearing the term inner game, which is so funny to me because that's like the most masculine way of saying like working on yourself.
Yeah.
Like it has to be a game.
The inner game guys. And I was like, it's called not just relying on a made up story you read on the internet, but okay.
Trying to actually be a better person instead of pretending to be a better person. So how did your journey kind of evolve after that? Because you've now talked to so many people on your show about, I always want to say manipulation. It's not manipulation, but also manipulation.
Yeah,
but like
influence
scams
and persuasion.
And influence. Yeah.
Yeah, when I talk about manipulation, now I'm talking about what people are being, like multi-level marketing scams and it being done to you, not like how to do it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Just to clarify that. You know, we were always white hat and we're still white hat. Now it's more, hey, here's what you got to look out for when it comes to scams and fraud and not how to do scams and fraud.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, and even actually, I want to say Neil's program when I went on it, although his book was extremely problematic, when I like went to his program, they were teaching people the importance of like being friends with women and being okay with them just being friends. Like, it was honestly, like, much better than some of the shit that I had read.
In the last 5 years, it's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
You know?
But it was pre-Me Too, and they were, like, they were talking about the importance of, like, whatever, not coercing people.
That's such a poem coming from men.
And a lot of those guys also, like, I think that there is a perception that anyone who's, like, seeking to be better with women or whatever is inherently creep, and a lot of them are really probably on the spectrum in their 20s, had never kissed anyone like sweet and like just legitimately had no social skills. I think
and a lot of them were raised in super weirdo religious cults to the point of your show where they were like, oh, I've literally never even been allowed to hold a woman's hand who's not my sister because I grew up like in a weird offshoot of the Amish community. I don't know, just learning how to use a friggin' smartphone.
Right. Like there is the
table of one right here.
There is the incel version, and obviously that is a culture that we have problems with. But then there are also people who genuinely need help, and it seems to me that that is more the audience that you were speaking to historically.
We didn't really know what incels were, but let me tell you, did we come across some? Now, they didn't relate to what we were saying as much, because remember, our lead gen was a podcast, so it wasn't like slick marketing. It was listening to me for 150 hours, and then if you still wanted to come into our workshops, it's because you were picking up what I was putting down. So incels really didn't even, I would say rarely, called us because it would be like, you need to be a better guy. You need to work on your stuff. You need to handle your issues and not dump your baggage off with women and expect them to solve it. And to incels, that's kryptonite because they're like, what are you talking about? All the problems are women's fault in my entire life and universe.
Right.
You don't know what you're talking about. So those guys hated us. They hated us because we were holding up a mirror and they're like, no, I want the cheat code, you bricks. And so they would never have given us 2 cents on the dot. Like, there's no way they would come to us. But I worked with a lot of guys in the industry, and I saw a lot of incel boot camps, and some of them were absolutely terrifying.
Really?
So it doesn't surprise me that some of those guys were violent. When this stuff happened, and they were like, Remember the Elliot Rodger thing, the guy who like killed a bunch of people? As soon as they said he was part of the PUA community, I was like, I know exactly what message boards this guy is on, and this was an inevitable result of that, for sure.
God, that is terrifying.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Well, I mean, I guess
I gave you indigestion. It's so terrifying.
I think the question that comes up for me right now, and I'm not sure if it's the next one that should be asked, but it is just the difference, like what influence is and what the difference is between that and manipulation, because there is a big difference in how you would explain that. Is that something we could talk about now?
Yeah, manipulation in general, I like the idea of persuasion, like I think there's sort of an instinctive reaction that people have to this idea that it's manipulation and therefore it's inherently bad, but also all marketing is manipulation. Like what is – where is that line?
The line between manipulation and influence is really hard to draw, right? Yeah. So if I'm selling you a car – which is something that happens from time to time. Not me doing it, but people doing it to
you. No, you're selling me a car.
I'm selling you a car. That's happening. What this – if you come in and you say, look, I want a sedan, but I don't know. Like I don't think I need leather seats. I really just commute to and from my job. And I'm in a place in my life where it's going to get dinged up because I have to park out in the street in the city. And then I go, all right. How about this Ford Fusion? You know, and you go, okay, I like that. But then I talk you up and I get you some leather seats because I make you feel like you want this more, you need it more, it's easier to clean even if it's really not. That's more influence, right? Because you still wanted a car and you still – maybe there is a cost benefit and I might be skewing the cost benefit to give you something more expensive. But you're not going to leave and go, oh my God, I just bought this car. I'm so screwed now. And then I walk away cackling because I don't care about you and I'm a sociopath, right? That's more manipulation if that's the result. So, but if the result is you go, you know, I'm glad I got leather seats and this car is awesome, but I spent a little bit more than I wanted to, but you know what? It's fine. And you rationalize it and you're happy with your purchase at the end of the day, then I would say that's more influence. So the line between influence and manipulation in my mind, and again, maybe there's somebody who would really, really sort of argue against this. It depends on the result.
So here's a question I have. What if you're manipulating somebody for something that's really good for them? Is that bad?
Yeah, I mean, that would be influence, right? By my sort of ham-fisted definition, that would be influence. Like if I'm getting you to eat less pizza because you want to lose weight because you have a kidney issue as diagnosed by a physician, then I might be manipulating you to do that by hiding the broccoli under some fat-free cheese, right? But do you feel tricked to the point where you're like, I just can't trust Jordan anymore? Do you know what was under that cheese? Do you have any – there was green shit under there, and I ate it.
Well,
it was nutritious.
I would also argue, though, that a lot of cult leaders and abusers of various sorts and con men are appealing to something that you want –
That's why it gets so tricky.
Something what you want is different than something that's good for you. If I tell you you're going to be enlightened, that is bullshit. It's a lie. I'm telling you that because I know you want it and you think it's good for you. But I don't have any intention of actually delivering that because I can't. I'm a cult leader. I'm scamming you.
But how do we know if I'm going to influence this person, but it's not manipulation because the thing that I am trying to influence them is good for them? Isn't that inherently manipulation because I'm deciding what's good for someone else?
Probably, yeah. If they know that it's good for them and they've admitted as such, but they can't get there themselves, like maybe they can't keep their gym appointment, so you've figured out how to wake them up every morning with an alarm that they hate, but it gets them to go to the gym. Is that manipulation? Yeah, kind of, but also it's, you know, maybe you're right on that line of influence and manipulation. I feel like this is almost like a philosophical question now that I'm probably not qualified to answer.
Well, I mean, it's there's no black and white answers, which is the frustrating part.
My friend George, actually, who used to teach for Neil, and I would say that George was like one of the most ethical people I'd ever met in this world. He definitely was on the more inner game side of things. Mm-hmm. He described it as like, we are all influencing each other all the time. Everything that we do is an influence, whether we like it or not, and it is a matter of whether we were doing it consciously or not, which I thought was an interesting take. You disagree?
I think that is whitewashing negative and dark manipulation by saying – that's kind of like saying, here, try this drug. Well, no, that could kill me. Hey, we're all getting busy dying, am I right?
Sure.
We're all going to the same place. That's the same line of bullshit.
Right, right.
Maybe he didn't mean it that way, but it really is the same line of bullshit. Like, yeah, everything I do technically influences something else. If you want to take it to the logical absurdity, the butterfly flapping its wings in China, something something typhoon in Japan, right? Like that's the butterfly effect.
Yeah.
But so what if we're all influencing each other? Does that mean I have no responsibility to make sure that what I'm doing influence wise is positive or doing something good for someone else just because, well, I'm accidentally going to influence them anyway? Again, maybe he didn't mean it that way, but that just seems like a total cop out.
But yeah, but that was like, that would sort of a philosophical argument I would hear at that point. Yeah. Which I, as Megan and I were talking about earlier, it's like with our boyfriends, mm-hmm. like we're communicating that with them in such a way that we know they will be more likely to receive it as opposed to like necessarily being straightforward, which we know could alienate them because men suck at communication a lot of the time, you know. Mm-hmm. Just trying to figure out where that line is something that I think is really interesting. And of course, none of us have the answer. But to me, the hardest part is like, I don't know what's right for someone else. And for me to make that decision, I think, is inherently the problem.
You should not make that decision.
Yeah.
You should not. Just because one is influence and one is manipulation doesn't mean that they're both harmless.
I do know what's good for other people, so I will keep doing it.
Well, you can, but not everyone can and should. You have everyone.
I got to do it.
You've talked about so many different kinds of scams and how to protect yourself from all these different kinds of scams on your show. What are the different kinds of scams? Do you have a particular conception of what makes people susceptible to them?
Give me a second to think here, because there is actually quite a bit of – there's different kinds of scams, right? There's different kinds of wants. The qualities, I would say, of people who fall for scams, though, tend to fall into a similar bucket. If you're scamming somebody, right, you promise them something that you know that they want by eliciting those needs. Mm. And that's what makes a good victim. And that's one of the reasons – that we see victims of every kind of scam kind of being victims of any kind of scam, if that makes sense. Right? Like the same person that gets caught up in a multi-level marketing scam and thinks that it's a legitimate business is the same person that invests in a Bitcoin robot that's going to double their investment in a few days because they're looking for something. They are insecure financially and probably otherwise. And so these types of people always fall for scams. What's funny is a lot of the financial scammers that you see on Instagram, they're doing the exact same thing that the pickup artist guys used to do back in the day, which had nothing to do with business for the most part. Like, I remember so many guys doing photo shoots with rented Ferraris, and they were like, yeah, I'm just going to put these in my dating profile pics or send these out to women that I'm working on right now. Now, those same guys are just posting it on Instagram, and maybe they're using it for dating, but really what they're doing is they're like, do you want to work 3 hours a week and drive a car like this? Insecurity might be more at the base, like, holy crap, I'm so desperate, I just lost my job, how am I going to feed my family? Insecurity is a powerful motivator like that, and probably the most.
That's really interesting. In a victim. I feel like victims of cults, it's often they're in a vulnerable moment in their lives. It tends to be very emotionally rooted, seeking comfort, seeking safety, seeking community, whatever. It seems like we're kind of talking about mostly financial type of scams, right?
Cult leaders, they almost always want money and power, and they do that through like sexual abuse and financial abuse. They all devolve into ostentatious displays of almost all of them.
From the
leaders. Like, remember, what was it? It's Osho, who people love, but was actually just a scammy POS cult leader like everyone, like all the rest of them. Wild, Wild Country. You saw that, right, on Netflix?
Of course. Yeah.
And he had like an airplane and 16 Rolls Royces, and they would brag about how many Rolls Royces this guy had on national talk shows, which I believe the adherents were not really allowed to watch, but some did, and they just thought, well, he deserves it. And it's like, no, it doesn't make any sense. You're giving your salary to this guy, and he's using it to buy his 16th Rolls Royce. It just doesn't even make any sense.
Well, his manipulation was like, I do this to show that it means nothing.
Yeah. I mean, sure.
No, it makes sense, Megan.
Yeah, you guys, it does make
sense. It's really logical. Yeah, the leaders definitely become these sort of ostentatious figures who want to show off their wealth. But I would say that wealth stuff doesn't typically play a role in most of the cults we see, maybe in some MLMs. Mm. We live in a culture that the American dream, in quotes, is that, like, the things that we value the most in this capitalist society that we live in, especially in America, is someone who is making a lot of money. That is what we use to ascribe value to people. So even if it's about wanting to show things off, I'm like, for many of those people, I think it's like, yeah, because that's what gives you value in this society. And so to me, that might be somebody who is experiencing a feeling of not being valued in some way.
Yeah, it's a crazy cycle.
Have you been scammed? You've been scammed, right?
Who hasn't been scammed?
Our producer was telling us.
Yeah, I did get scammed once.
About
I
got a Harvard scammed thing.
Harvard? Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. This is so ridiculous. I forgot about that. You know what? It's true because it's a scam, but I was actually an unwitting part of the actual scam.
We'll use whatever example's best. Any example of you being scammed is great.
This is glorious, actually. This is way more interesting than the example I was going to talk about. Okay.
Good job, Steve.
So this guy met me he was a vendor at like a, you know how like when you go to a course or something, there's like a live event, there's like booths, like get your web hosting from Squarespace. And it's like, here's a keychain and here's 10% off your first month. Well, this guy approaches me. I'm a student at this event or like giving a testimonial, I think, at this point, because I'd already finished my class and my friend was running the live event. And one of the sponsors walked up and he's like, hey, I would love for you to speak at my event at Harvard Business School. And I was like, well, I'm all ears. I'd love to speak at Harvard Business School. It sounds like a good opportunity. And he's like, yeah, we're doing one at Harvard Business School. We're doing one at West Point. We're doing one at whatever. And he's like, at West Point, we're going to have some astronaut guy or whatever is going to be there. And like, you can get a photo with him, but also you should speak there. It's going to be a great time. We'll get a tour of West Point. I'm like, this all sounds like really great. This guy has all these high profile events.
I get to hang out with an astronaut.
Yeah, why not? Right. So he's like, you know, my thing is I get people media, I get people on TV. And I was like, cool, you know, whatever. That sounds good. I don't need the TV or the media thing, but I'll speak at your event. No problem. He's like, you'll be my guest there. The only problem is I can't pay you. I was like, you know what? If you're going to give me a produced video of this, I'll give a talk. I want to see Harvard's campus and speak at the business school. I'd love to see West Point. Like, this is like a – I would never say yes to a free speaking thing now, but 5-6 years ago, whatever, right? Why not? So I go to Harvard Business School and I'm like, this is strange. There's like so many people here, but they're older. And I'm like, these aren't business school students. I'm like, the event's open in the community maybe. I walk in and there's all these other sort of like vendor booths. And I'm like, this is like another live event with sponsors, but it's Harvard Business School. I'm so confused. And so I go in and the guy's like, so, okay, last minute change. I know that you thought you're going to have a longer talk. There's a logistical issue. You're going to talk for 10 minutes. I was like, dude, what a waste of time. But you know what? Screw it. I'm on the East Coast already. I got a lot of stuff done. You know, whatever. Who cares? So I chop my talk way down to 10 minutes. Nobody's going to get anything useful out of 10 minutes, but whatever. I'm kind of annoyed because one of the reasons I was here was a video at Harvard Business School, blah.
Can I just put in something really quickly, which is this is what we see in cults all the time. The further in you go, the further in you're like, I already am on the East Coast. Okay, I'm already here. I'm already whatever.
Yeah, I'm like rationalizing my time. Yeah.
I gave a little. Why not give a little more? Yeah. Okay.
Also, how rude am I if I'm like, I want my 40-minute time slot on my produced video that I'm not paying for, or I'm going to, not show up to your event, even though you were kind of gracious. Now you're just having – and also, he made it sound like this is a logistical thing, not like I duped you into coming here and you were never going to have more than 10 minutes, and that was the plan from the jump, right? So this was like, okay, I don't want to screw up your whole event. I run events. Logistics suck. Sure, if you need me for 10 minutes, like, it's not ideal for me, but oh, well, I'm not a diva. I'm just going to deal with it. So I go up and I talk and I'm like, oh, that was kind of whatever, you know, a waste of time. But if people enjoyed it, people enjoyed it. And I go out and this guy's like, oh, I loved your talk. I'm like, OK, cool. You know, what are you doing here? Are you a student at Harvard? I'm just like small talk. He's like, no, I'm also speaking. I was like, oh, what are you speaking about? And he's like, I can't remember, but it was like dermatology something. And I was like, that's weird. What is this event? You know, like I thought this was like an event for leaders. And he's like, yeah, but we're all speaking. And I was like, what do you mean we're all speaking? And he proceeded to explain to me that every single person in the audience is actually also speaking at the event for 5 minutes.
No. Oh, my God.
And I was like, wait just a damn minute. And I left and the announcer guy, the guy who was running it, was like, remember, everyone's required to be here for the duration of the event. And I was like, one, fuck that. And also, I'm out. And two, I'm slowly figuring out that this is a frickin' like total sham and that all these people paid to be in this room to give their 5-minute talk so that they could say they spoke at Harvard Business School, get a t-shirt, get a produced video that's a highlight reel. And I was like, I'm out. So I walk out the door and I'm not even kidding you. I'm 3 seconds out the door in the hallway where the vendor booths are. And some dude grabs me in a hey, buddy kind of lock. And he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt. A photographer comes out from, I'm not even kidding, behind like a cardboard stand and starts taking photos and video. And this guy goes, I'm Jordan Harbinger's publisher. He just wrote a best-selling book. It's number one on Amazon. And I go, hold the fuck on. I'm super uncomfortable right now. What is going on? And he goes, no, what? And I'm like, I don't know you. what do you mean I wrote a best-selling book? I don't have a book. And he goes, let me just clarify. Sorry, you weren't on the emails. Everybody's talk today is going to be transcribed.
No.
It's been put into a PDF on Amazon. We pre-sold Amazon until it got on the top of the charts. So everyone in here is a best-selling author of an Amazon bestseller because your talk is going to be – and I was like, what the ever-living fuck is going on here? I was so pissed.
Oh,
and I was like,
God.
I do not consent to this. I felt weird. I was like, I do not consent to this. I know nothing about this.
Yeah.
This is weird as hell. Please do not put me in there. And I made like a scene, which I felt guilty about. And now I'm like, I should have made a bigger goddamn scene. Right. And I was so angry because it just slowly was creeping in that I had been brought there to be the headliner of this event so that all of these schmoes who had paid to be there could be like, well, Jordan Harbinger, this big like podcast guy, was headlining it, and I spoke on stage with him, and I sure enough, all these people had been bragging about how they were at Harvard Business School with Jordan Harbinger and a couple of other people, and I was like, this is so infuriating, because none of this was brought to me as like, hey, you're going to be doing this, and this is what I'm doing. It was all just like an event where I'm a guest and everyone else is going to be there. In a business thing, but it was this weird moneymaker for this guy who manufactures fake celebrities by putting them on stage. So the astronaut guy at the other thing, he was paid to be there. He took selfies with people so that they could go, oh yeah, I was at West Point speaking and I met General Schwarzkopf or whatever. You know, it's all fake, fake, fake. And I was so pissed off because it damages my brand to be a part of any bullshit
right
like this.
Right. Oh, there's so much shit like that in Hollywood too, where it's just like bullshitters making you think that they're doing something legitimate and they're not, and then you're suddenly attached to a project that makes you look horrible. This has happened to me, kind of different but similar. Just like, now I have this ridiculous movie on my IMDb page and I'm like, nobody ever look at that, please. I don't know how to remove it. So you have said that the law of attraction is a dangerous idea, right?
Yeah, the fake, like, you manifested, it comes true kind of thing.
Can you tell us your thoughts on that? We haven't really weirdly talked that much about that on the show. Megan's, are you a law of attraction girl?
I'm totally a law of attraction girl. I'm not a secret girl, but I do think that we can.
I'm an anti-law of attraction girl, and she's a pro.
And I think you're very anti as well. So let me have
anti.
It.
Yeah, can you hit us with it?
There's just no evidence at all other than confirmation bias that there is anything called the law of attraction. And also, the problem with any of the studies that have supposedly been done on this, they're all just nonsense. There's nothing that holds up to any remote scrutiny. Nothing's ever been reproduced, which is what you have to be able to do in science, real science. You have to be able to reproduce something. Nothing is even approaching replicability when it comes to the law of attraction. The other problem with it is it doesn't stand up to scrutiny. So when somebody says you manifest what's happening in the world, there's not really been a good answer to, oh, okay, so if this is the result of your thoughts and your actions, then what about kids in Ukraine who are dying of thirst and starvation and drinking dirty water?
Yeah, I mean, there's super levels of it, I think, that just to be clear, because I don't want to say that people born and raped immediately attracted that to themselves. That's insane. War, stuff like that. I think if you're in a healthy environment, you can influence things.
If it's metaphysical, then it's not really what you think it is, and it's something else. It doesn't mean that there's no result that looks the way that you – that doesn't mean there's no result because of something that you've done. It's just not magic energy put out into the universe and coming back to you, or whatever the nonsense is in The Secret.
There's a field of positive psychology, which is not just positive thinking. There's actual evidence about the way that you – it's the science of thriving as opposed to – just traditional psychology, which is more of the science, like studying what is wrong with us. It's more studying how to thrive. Like there's some great evidence in that field about, like, you know, how gratitude journaling
is like you
it's like the Tetris effect.
Noticing I have a white Mini Cooper now, all I see is white Mini Coopers.
Right.
I see something in myself that's positive. Now suddenly it's reflected back to me.
But I think
that's literally just your attention and confirmation bias.
Absolutely.
There's easy scientific
and,
ways to explain that.
Law of attraction is sexy. I like it.
Restructuring your thinking.
That's the real reason that you believe in it, is because it's sexy and you like it. And also, frankly, that it's simple. And I don't mean that you're simple for believing in it. I mean it's an attractive proposition.
Hot.
But it's especially attractive. And again, I'm not including you in this. It's especially attractive for people who are hopeless, desperate, are arrogant and want a vanity point that they can point to, or are insecure totally. In some way.
The magical because, thinking is not helpful.
Right. Yeah. Magical thinking is not helpful. Yeah. And so – and the problem with the law of attraction is all these things that we're talking about, confirmation bias, positive psychology, all the things that y'all mentioned – the law of attraction guys and gals will dip into that and they'll put like a toe or a finger in there and they'll go, see, science. And then they'll go, blah, 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 quantum energy, reflective, blah. And they'll pull a Joe Dispenza and it's just like, wait, you just made up 98% of that shit, but you touched the truth. And it's funny because we're looking at the Russia and Ukraine situation right now, and what the Kremlin loves to do and that Russia loves to do in their propaganda is they'll take a dollop of truth and the rest of it is complete
That's
bullshit.
What's dangerous,
but since there's
yeah.
a dollop of truth in there, people right. go, well, I've seen that with my own eyes. Mm-hmm. That must mean
totally.
Everything else in this report is a bunch of true things, even if it's complete fabrication. And that's what good con men will do and cult leaders will do. They'll say, have you ever noticed blah, blah, blah? And everyone will go, oh, I have. Well, that's because this, 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 and this. And everyone goes, now it all makes sense. But this critical thinker goes, that's not why that's happening. That's happening for a totally different reason. You're trying to take credit for a thing that people are now noticing because you pointed it out, and you're saying you caused it. You did not cause it. The reason people are noticing it is because you are pointing it out.
Right.
That is all you're doing.
Or originated
taking,
that idea when it's been right. an idea that's been around for literally centuries.
Exactly. Like all these amateur con artists that you see online now, it's really funny. Like you'll see some of these like crappy-ass influencers, and some of them are getting rich off this. They'll steal ideas from the five love languages, and they will literally just go on a video and pretend like they just made that shit up on the fly waiting for their coffee at Starbucks.
Yeah. This is the five Miranda languages. Her name's Miranda. And you're like, wait, no.
Yeah, like
did
where
you
have
know
I seen this before?
If you stop and notice how you're feeling, you can have a different experience. Like, yeah, Buddhism has known that for thousands of years. Like, shut up.
Literally thousands of years. Literally thousands of years. Like, you didn't translate that from Sanskrit and figure out how to make it work in Detroit, okay?
Right.
Somebody else has come up with this.
And also just like the way – if you're born into – like kind of what you were speaking to a second ago. If you're born into poverty, your life outcomes are just statistically – you're more likely to be have addiction problems. You're more likely to struggle with depression and anxiety. Like your life outcomes mm-hmm. are just like statistically going to be worse because you were born into poverty, which has nothing to do with the way that you're thinking or the way that you're – like you're not doing life wrong.
Precisely. Right.
I think
right.
And when I see like some of these new agey influencer types peddling this kind of stuff, I'm like, this is really this is blaming people for their circumstances, which
yep.
we are all strictly a product of our circumstances, like combined with our genetics. So like I'm going to blame somebody because they have a poor life outcome after all of this shit they've experienced that I have never been able like I've never been through that myself.
Right. And of course, their counter will be. What am I supposed to do? I'm empowering people. All you're doing is saying that they're disempowered because of their life situation. I'm giving people the way to be empowered, and you guys aren't doing that, Jordan, right? You're just telling them that they're a product of their environment. And while they may have, a kernel of a point, lying to somebody about their capability or what they can and can't do is not helpful to most people. So what they have to do, what these people have to do is they have to pick – the one person who took their course and is now successful, not necessarily as a result of their course, but is the exception to the rule. And everybody else who failed, they'll just go, well, that's your fault you didn't succeed in the MLM. You didn't work hard enough. Look at this person. They've been doing it for 5 years and now they're driving a Mercedes and they have two homes.
Right.
So everyone else will blame themselves when really, if you were to buy lottery tickets, you'd have a better chance of having a better outcome than the winner that person pointed to. And it would be the result of winning the lottery, not the result of spending 5 years trying to get a business that is inherently flawed to work.
I truly hate when people are like, this is my information, and if it doesn't work, it's because you're doing it wrong.
That's classic cult. Do you have practical tips for how to like protect yourself from a scam or like how to detect if somebody's trying to like manipulate you?
Yeah. Typically, I love using MLMs as an example because they're so insidious and destructive and they're everywhere. So one thing that MLM kryptonite is strong relationships with people that are an outside the organization. In fact, cult kryptonite is strong relationships with anybody who's outside the organization. And that's one of the reasons that cults try to alienate people from their relationships.
Right.
Like, from the jump, because those relationships are what keep people sane. You know, if you are selling hair chemicals that are crappy and overpriced, that there's a reason Facebook groups say, get rid of all the haters in your life, the people who tell you you can't do it. You might have to take a break from those people. Mm. Yeah, because if your mother, sister, best friend from school, and all of your colleagues at work are telling you that what you're doing sounds kind of like a bullshit scam that their friend's friend's friend was involved in and lost a bunch of money, that is going to weigh on you if you are a smart person who listens to their relationship. So they try and get you to – they will try and preempt those objections. So if you are thinking – huh, is this really too good to be true? Or should I join this? What should I do? Bounce it off your friends. Maybe even bring some of your friends to any events that you are doing that are not recruiting events. The problem with MLMs is everything is a recruiting event, right? But when I go to these self – I used to go to a lot of these self-help culty seminars to investigate them, and I would always call my wife at the end of the night – because she would reel me in. I'd be like, yeah, they made a lot of good points about this. You know, this other thing was really manipulative. But, they, you know, to be fair, they had good points about this. And she's like, okay, this doesn't sound super good. Like, what about this other thing? What about this other thing? And she would ask questions. And I'd go, yeah, I know you're right. There was a lot. I didn't think about that also being manipulative. That's good. I'm going to write that down. Mm. And so there's a lot of, like, when someone's looking from an outside perspective, or they might go, you're really excited about this for somebody who's spent 3 days staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, why are you so excited? And you go, you know, I think I'm just really exhausted. And also they make us dance around a lot. And it's like, oh, okay. And then after I went to a few of these, it was like, yep, they're making us dance because we're all tired. Okay, this is getting us psyched up again. Oh, they're making a promise of a future result based on, you know, financial stuff. And I remember
Tony
one
Robbins.
Group.
I was going to say, Tony Robbins. Landmark,
Yeah, Landmark. It's like project in the future when you have that second home and you are able to tell your boss, fuck you, man, I don't need to work here anymore. And everyone's like, yeah, I can't wait to tell my boss and my ex-husband that fuck those guys. And I'm just sitting around, I'm looking around the room, and I'm, as a person who is not necessarily that vain, as evidenced by what I'm wearing right now, is not that insecure anymore, being married and having two kids and stuff like that. I look around the room and I see these people and I'm like, holy shit, these people came here thirsty and they are drinking from a fire hose of bullshit right now. And some of the stuff in Hollywood was the worst, because I'd go, wow, they're really sort of saying, like, imagine when you're famous and you're on stage and da-da-da. And we'd get in these small groups and I'd go, okay, just out of curiosity, how many of you are actors, singers, performers of some kind? And, like, the entire room would raise their hands these sort of questions. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, aha, this is tailor-made. I bet if I went to one of these in another state, like, if I went to one in New York, they'd be like, how many of you are businessmen and working in finance? And everything would go up. And their example would be like, imagine when you're a managing director at your bank. Like, they're going to tailor the example and the future projection to match the audience in the room. And I saw some extremely manipulative stuff like that. So also agreeing with yourself to not sign up for the next thing right away, even if it sounds like a really good deal, because all of these places rely on you being excited in the moment and at the end. And so they'll say, if you sign up for next weekend's workshop right now, we will give it to you for 50% off. But the second you walk out that door, the price goes up. Oh my God, I really want to do it, but I don't know if I could do it next weekend because I'd have to ask off work again. Oh, but it's 50% off. When you already go, I know I'm going to pay more for it if I do it again, but I agreed and promised myself I wouldn't do it. If you stick with that, one, you'll find out that 50% off deal literally is all the fucking time, because they'll take anybody with a pulse.
Yeah.
Two, you won't give a shit about it in 48 hours or in a week, because you won't be excited anymore, because you won't have to dance to an Avicii track at 4 o'clock in the morning because they're running late again.
Because we are about to walk over hot coals again, which is what I did at Tony Robbins.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So they put you in a heightened state, a heightened emotional state. No one should be making decisions. Financial decisions or other large life decisions when you are still in this heightened state, right? Like you take a beat, you go home, you talk to people, you let your mood settle down, and then you can decide and evaluate.
We back at my old company when I used to run the boot camps, we had a rule where at the end we would not upsell another program unless somebody came to us privately. And we even said, we're not going to upsell you. And people were shocked when we didn't do it. They were shocked when we didn't try to sell them something. And they would go, one of the reasons was because everybody knows about what you call the post boot camp or post workshop high. And so we knew that people were expecting it. And it just seemed really shitty to do that, because you build up all this goodwill throughout the week. And then to be like, yep, we're just like everyone else. drops everyone. And we thought, you know, if we really crushed it, they're going to have results for the next year. They'll come back to us and be like, okay, I want the advanced thing. And a lot of people did. They came back. And then we felt like we earned that because they were getting results out of everything. You know, we didn't just like trick them while they were super stoked running around Hollywood Boulevard. Like, hey, sign this thing now that you've had three shots and we'll see you in 2 months.
That's not a win. I don't understand. It's so sad.
Unless you are a scam artist, right? If you're scamming people, you don't give a shit about them, right? You're victimizing people.
If you
you're not running a business.
If you have time to answer one more question,
I
would love to know, like, for someone like you who has spent some time in your life and work, you know, helping advise people and stuff, like, what is the ethical way to go about being a leader and how do you prevent it from becoming harmful?
Look, I think if you over-deliver on things that you promise, you're going to have a miles-long line of word-of-mouth referrals. So, like, you can I buy a lot of ads for the Jordan Harbinger show, my podcast, right? I buy a ton. But the reason people stick around is because the content is, in theory, it's good, right? And that's why I've been doing a podcast for 15 plus years. But if the podcast is bad and you market a bunch, you're just kind of wasting your money because it's like a bucket with holes in it. You're carrying it full of water. It's just going to drip out by the time you get back to your destination. So you have to have something that's not leaky, right? You have to have something that is going to keep people invested. And the way that you do that is by earning their trust. And so short term, it's better to scam people and get the money as fast as you can and screw them and fuck you, I got mine. In long term, even if you are a self-interested, don't give a crap about anyone else business titan, it's still better long term to have a sterling reputation as somebody that's trustworthy and does the right thing, because that will generate referrals and word of mouth and trust. And people who trust you do business with you for a long period of time, whether that in my case means buying a mattress that I recommend on the podcast or whether it means trusting me enough to listen to the show and, you know, give me the ad impressions and then refer the show to their friends. The Jordan Harbinger show spreads a lot by word of mouth. So it's better to do that. The problem is it takes longer. Mm-hmm. So if you are impatient and you want money now because you are entitled, then you can wait. You can wait for the results, and that is what long-term success is. So for me, I don't really have to worry about that. I'm not super motivated by money. I never really cared about being wealthy, and it's not that I don't care at all, but there's such a thing as enough is enough, and I also have to sleep at night, and I have to look at my kids in the morning when they wake up and be like, Daddy, earn this money and scam it out of people.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot to be said for integrity, but integrity and doing the right thing still makes sense long term in a business if you plan to be in business for a long time, because your currency is trust at that point. And what's that phrase? Like, it takes a lifetime to build a reputation and moments to destroy it, or something like that, right? And that's really true. And you can't buy your way into a positive reputation, really. So you have to do that stuff. And sometimes that means turning down easy money. Like, to give a simple example, I don't recommend gambling stuff in apps on the Jordan Harbinger show. I don't sell supplements that are probably bullshit that I can't get good information on, or stuff that I don't use. I won't endorse a piece of furniture that I don't have. And they'll go, oh, we can't get it to you in time. Can you just endorse it? No, I cannot do that. I haven't sat on this thing. I'm not going to say it's comfortable. And, you know, you will lose money from doing that occasionally.
Right.
But I think it's worth it, because at the end of the day, you can look at yourself in the mirror. You can look at your kids in the face. You can tell your listeners you care about them and you're not lying. And, you know, maybe if I was a sociopath, I wouldn't care about any of that stuff. But if you're a normal person, it's bad for you to do that to yourself and to other people. And it's bad for your health. It's bad for the way that you exist in the world, to put it sort of in a woo-woo philosophical way.
Mm-hmm.
You won't like who you are. And if you don't like who you are, you're going to be a miserable, miserable human being. And so that trade-off wasn't worth it for me. And I think most people come to that conclusion.
I hope so.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. But some don't, and they end up on your shows as case studies, right, of scams and cults.
Yeah. Well, do you have any last words for us, last words of wisdom?
Yeah, I would say, look, if somebody you know is being scammed, you're not going to catch them on an upswing when they're super excited about their new MLM self-help cult that they joined. You're not going to get them. You have to wait for the downswing. You catch them on a downswing. And then when you find, like, hey, this isn't really work, you know, you can ask questions and the cracks will start to show. And then the best approach is to tell those people not the particulars of the scam and why it's a bunch of nonsense, but focus on the larger effect that it's having on that person, right? Like, How has it helped you? How is it maybe – have you achieved what this group has promised you? Mm-hmm. Are other people in the group benefiting or not benefiting in the same way? Is the organization explaining everything clearly to you? Does the organization encourage questions and criticism? Are you objectively better off than you were before you joined? You know, like things like that. Also showing the impact of the scam on your relationship with them. Because if I say, hey, look, Herbalife doesn't work. Here's a report showing that 99.6% of people involved in MLMs lose money. They're going to go, whatever, dude. They're going to argue with you. Well, my upline said that's not true. It's fake news. If you say this is negatively affecting our relationship, they can't argue with that because you are the ultimate arbiter of whether or not that relationship is positive. So they can't sit there and go, no, we're still good friends. You're fucking wrong. Like you can tell them, hey, you've been kind of alienated from me and the rest of the family. And the reason is because you're always gone working on this thing. And I know you say it's a business, but – and then you go back to what we talked about before with criticism and is this meeting your needs – because even if something is really good for you, even if you're working out all the time and you became a successful business owner, if your spouse, friend, brother, whatever, kids come to you and say this is negatively affecting our relationship, it could be the best thing you're involved in. It still makes sense for you to then reevaluate what you're doing with that business or that event because you're screwing with your family life. So it's really hard for people to argue the relationship angle. So catch them on a downswing, ask the right questions, and focus on the effect it's having on the relationship. And then last but not least, support the person. You know, now is not the time to go, I fucking told you it was a scam, you idiot, they're like can't pay their rent and they're living on your couch. Yeah. What you do is support them and don't antagonize them further, because one of the reasons these people get sucked into that is because of desperation, insecurity.
I mean, we talk about this a lot, but like attacking someone with facts just isn't an effective tool.
Yeah, it's not.
But having people assess how they feel and whether it's actually
and how you
increasing
feel.
Their life.
Yeah, yeah. And really relation to them. Really
yeah.
smart.
Yep.
I love it. Yeah. Thank you.
Cool.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. I love trying to help people avoid scams because this is one of those like super high return activities, right? We talk to a few thousand people or 20 whatever thousand people and they go, huh, I was going to get into this MLM thing because my friend likes it and I really haven't heard much about it. And now I'm going to think this is what critical thinking is, right? They might not be totally convinced by us, but they know enough to go, maybe I'll Google Jordan Harbinger scam MLM and find if there's an article or a show, which we have, of course, on the website that outlines everything I just talked about, but in way, way more detail. And they'll listen to more of your podcasts about this. And then they might go, you know, I trust my friend, but I also – these people know what they're talking about too. I wonder if my friend is a victim of a scam. And then we just saved them from spending their life savings on frickin' protein shakes.
Mm. By the way, I love the way your website is structured and the fact that you have starter packs for all of these different topics. That is so smart.
Thank
and
you.
We might copy
Thank
that.
You. Yeah, copy it. Copy it and then put the starter packs. What I've learned is if you go to jordanharbinger.com/start, you'll see the starter packs. But also, if you search for – let me go to the start page. So if you go to the start page, there's all those starter packs like persuasion, influence, cults, scams, abnormal psychology, you know, China, whatever. But then also there are Spotify in Spotify, if you search for Jordan Harbinger scam or cult, you'll find those same playlists. And so people can just binge your show if
Love
you do that.
That
in your show. Yeah.
That's
so I highly recommend people, one, check out those starter packs on my show, but also then you should do the same thing. Because I think podcasts are hard to discover, right? Somebody has to like shove it down your throat like a multi-level marketing scheme in order to get you to listen. And that's most people aren't going to do that. But if you have something that's sort of easy, then people can share that or just jump in and listen to like five episodes at once.
That's genius. Y'all, you should definitely check out his podcast. He has seriously the most interesting people.
We listened to one with a pimp. It was amazing.
Yeah.
So go for it. Go wild, guys.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Jordan.
Hey, thank you. This is a lot of fun. Hopefully we'll do the next one in person.
Yeah, would love that.
Absolutely.
All righty. This concludes our conversation with Jordan Harbinger. Thanks to Jordan for coming on. So, Megan, tell me, have you ever been picked up by a pickup artist?
I mean, I guess I don't know, but I probably would be very turned off by that.
Okay, can I make a confession?
Yeah.
Have I ever said this on the show?
No, because I have no idea what you're going to say.
Okay. I hooked up with a pickup artist knowing full well every single play that he was doing, and I had read the game and I thought it was cheesy as fuck, and decided to hook up with him anyway. How embarrassing is that?
So were you just like, you needed some love and you were just like, fuck it, I don't care? Or were you like, I know this is fake, but it's such good technique that I'm like...
It was bad technique. It was not good technique.
Okay, so you were just like, I'm lonely and bored.
Yes,
and-
but also I think here's... I think this was an element of it. Because I knew what he was doing... I almost felt more powerful than him.
Ooh, interesting.
But it worked out in his favor, but also it worked out in my favor because then he wanted to hang out more and I didn't.
Ooh, I bet that went really well for his psyche.
I think something about knowing precisely the moves that someone is doing and how they are trying to get, like, to win you, for some reason, I was like... Oh, I called him out, by the way. I was like, I know exactly what you're doing. Mm. You just did the square or whatever the fuck the mental exercise was. And he was like talking to my friend instead of me. He was like doing all of the things. And he thought it was like so hot that I knew what it was. And then I don't know, you guys. It was one of my very, I don't know, one night stand in many years, but it was one of the last ones.
Ooh, what a way to go out.
What a way to go out. Honestly, he's really nice. We're still friends. He is not a part of that world anymore. I think he probably regrets that time in his life.
It was a thing. Some guys needed some help and some guys were nice about it. So whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatevs. It can go either way.
I think generally speaking, just be yourself, you know?
Yeah, just be yourself. Come on, guys.
It's really unique advice.
Well, hopefully we'll make it to next week. Hopefully the world will still be here in a week. If we do, please join us back here on the podcast for the first week of Trauma Month.
Yeah, well, rethinking trauma.
The first week of rethinking trauma. The first week of us giving you more trauma.
I think every time someone listens, they're getting trauma, to be honest.
Really? Why?
As we talk for too long.
Oh, that's right. just
you know
what?
Speaking of self-deprecating, whatever.
All right, you guys, remember to follow your gut, watch out for red flags, and
never, ever trust me.
Bye.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered, but we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.